It's time for Twig this week in Google. Jeff's in New Delhi or somewhere. But don't worry, because we've got a great show planned for you. Mike Elgin is here. Aaron Newcomb. Aaron's going to show us his new arcade project. We'll talk about Google's quarterly results, Twitter's too. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly, CacheFly.com.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 298, recorded Wednesday, April 29th, 2015. Aaron's Arcade. This Week at Google is brought to you by Braintree. If you're working on a mobile app and searching for simple payment solutions, check out Braintree. With one simple integration, you can offer your customers every way to pay, period. To learn more and for your first $50,000 in transactions fee-free, go to BraintreePayments.com/twig. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, and Jeff Jarvis is somewhere outside the United States. Where is he today, Jason? He's in India?
You know, he told me.
He told me, suddenly I forgot.
The problem is he's all over. So anyway, he's outside of the internet, if such a thing might exist. Fortunately, we always have great people to fill in. Mike Elgin's here, our news director.
I'm here.
You had a busy morning with the Build conference. We'll talk about that.
It was, we had an awesome show today, Tech News.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
Actually.
Yeah.
Believe it. Hard to believe that on a Google show, I would say I'm excited, but I am actually about Microsoft.
Yeah, yeah.
Aaron Newcomb's also here.
Yeah, yeah.
You see him all the time on All About Android and on Floss Weekly.
Yep.
We love Aaron, and he brought along his little Raspberry Pi project.
Yeah, I had to because I feel so inadequate sitting next to you guys. You guys are going to have to really keep me honest today, but I did bring a project, and we'll talk about that.
I feel like
later.
You brought Watson.
Yeah,
I feel like really. Watson is sitting there ready to
it's
answer
like
questions.
It's kind of like the opposite of Watson, actually.
It's backwards Watson.
Backwards Watson, yeah. But it's fun.
So this is a show where we talk about Google, the cloud, Twitter, of course, big in the news. Twitter results got leaked, although I guess they didn't get leaked. They released them ahead of time.
Right.
And
the
stock plummeted, and they closed. They stopped trading briefly.
But it didn't plummet because of the leak. It just plummeted because the leak was accurate.
Right.
It plummeted because the information was bad for Twitter.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So, but they showed a profit.
They showed...
So what went wrong at Twitter? Why did the stock plop? First of all, we should say, A, don't get your stock advice from us. That's not our job. We're not here to make you money in the stock market. We're here to talk about technology from the point of view of users of technology. So if we say we hate Twitter, that doesn't mean
it
should sell the stock. That means we don't like it as a user. But I think the stock price does not necessarily reflect the strength or weakness of a company.
Yeah, right.
It reflects what investors think they're going to be able to make or lose on.
Well, one of the things people aren't talking about is that online advertising is hard right now. Like everybody
hard
is
for some,
struggling.
Not for Facebook and Google.
Well, I think generally speaking, what's happening is that everything's moving to mobile, and mobile is less monetizable. The prices are lower. The eyeballs don't stick around as long. It's difficult to monetize mobile users, and everybody's becoming increasingly mobile. Their revenue was up, but their advertising dollars were not what anybody expected. It's actually pretty dire in a way. The problem is that Twitter has lots of eyeballs, and they're having trouble figuring out how to monetize it.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they're doing is
that's always been the case. In fact, that they're monetizing at all is almost new.
Well, this is the thing. You know, they began all these major initiatives to monetize. That you know, they have suddenly lots of ads. They're messing around with putting ads in the stream. All that stuff has happened recently. And so investors were like, okay, let's see the money now. After all this time, let's see the money. And the money that they are seeing is not what they expected. It was a significant disappointment to just about everybody and something of a surprise, I think. And so that was, you know, that was just, I think, part of the larger trend. And you see, and we're probably going to talk about Google's earnings report. We're probably going to talk about Facebook and so on. And you see this sort of hidden... You know, Google and Facebook are a lot more diversified. They don't just have the one thing that they're trying to monetize. And so but hidden in all this is the fact that advertising right now, there's a glut of ads. Everybody's going mobile. eyeballs are super fickle, and it's just really difficult. They're going to have to go to increasing extremes, contextual advertising, targeted retargeted marketing, and so on, to get people to be able to monetize people.
What are they doing right now to make money? I'll see a sponsored post in my tweet stream. Well, for one thing, the first thing they're doing is shutting down third-party Twitter clients, because you don't see ads of third-party Twitter clients necessarily.
Right.
So they want you to use their own Twitter client on mobile or the website. And that's where you'll see what sponsored posts, much like Facebook. The second post in the news feed is always an ad,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
So I'm seeing that. I'm starting to see that in Twitter, although not always. And then you can buy. In fact, I don't see one in my Twitter feed right now. And then you can buy followers by saying, here's a suggested follower. And you can buy trends. So you can say, but it will always say, won't it, sponsored or paid for or that kind of thing. Here's, for instance, here's in a who to follow, Richard L. Trumka promoted.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now, it's still somebody that I follows him. So in that sense, you may not see that in your feed, but that's a promoted to follow. What's the issue? Are these not making as much money as they wanted them to make?
Well, one of the things that they did was they transitioned to, they have these downloadable ads, and they transitioned to a system, instead of eyeballs, they're actually more honest about it. They're actually charging the advertisers when action is taken through the ad.
Cost per action, right. Instead of cost per click.
Exactly.
View.
And so that's, they've gotten a hit there. They're also having a retention problem. And this retention is on the high end, so lots of people are leaving. And so they say, what they said in the call yesterday was that they're doing all these different things with algorithmic filtering and these different streams.
A la
you go
Facebook.
Away and you come back. Yes. And they're saying that this is designed to retain these high end users. I think that's the kind of thing that's driving away the high end users.
And by the way, you could turn that off. So I got that. Stuff you missed.
Right.
And do you want to see this? And I immediately said no.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I want to use Twitter in the old fashioned way. But presumably people who are new to Twitter.
Yeah.
Will say, oh, well, I guess that's how you do it.
But this is something that, and again, they have better information than I do. I don't know how much of this is spin, but my feeling has always been that they're trying so hard to be Facebook that they're alienating their most loyal users.
Right.
And what they're doing with that those initiatives is going after the less loyal people. And so they've got increasingly sort of novice, not really that committed to the platform kind of audience.
Right.
I think.
Right. Well, and that's true. I mean, if you look at their numbers, their users actually went up. Their mobile users, which was stagnant over the past couple quarters, actually dramatically went up in this quarter. So they're getting more eyeballs. But like you say, if they're loyal users, the people that are actually creating content are leaving, then that's a big problem.
We've also talked about the fact that the market expects a certain amount of growth every quarter. And
right.
Twitter is strongly motivated to maintain that growth. And that's one of the things that's kept Twitter from booting spammers, trolls, other undesirables for Twitter, is that they can't afford not to have that growth.
But the spammers and trolls are yet another thing that's driving away the committed users. How many reports have you seen of major celebrities, usually women, who basically say, I quit Twitter. I can't handle the vitriol anymore. I can't handle the trolls. For every one of those famous people, there's probably 1,000 people who aren't famous who are doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's having the trolls and the harassment, I think, are probably having a suppressive sort of effect on conversation generally and engagement generally, because it's really bad. And what's happened is that everybody else has gotten better troll control, and Twitter has been lagging in that area. And so the trolls have all just come rushing into Twitter. Twitter's the only game in town these days.
It is, because everybody else has effectively gotten rid of it. Mostly because of a real names policy, I think.
Yes, and, you know, YouTube.
Google Plus doesn't do it anymore, but.
Exactly, but Google Plus, like, if a troll posts, you know, again, we've had this conversation a million times.
Yeah.
I can delete the troll's message.
Right. Right.
Whereas on Twitter, their solution was algorithmic filtering.
Hide it
from you.
Yeah.
Everybody else still sees it. The trolls see it.
In your article, you wrote a great article on this. What'd you liken it to?
Oh, it's like if you call the police because there's an armed intruder on your lawn, they come and close the curtains.
Just don't look.
Yeah. The problem is that you're upset about it.
Just don't look.
Exactly. So it's, and that's a, and that, that article talked, brought in the rarely discussed, aspect of trolling that is reputation management. So if somebody's trashing your reputation in public, not knowing that it's happening doesn't help your reputation.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Reputation management is a much larger conversation, because that is a big issue. When I talk to kids, teenagers, I say,
I hate to have to say this, but make a website, put stuff you are proud of up there, because if you don't show up in the Google search and then somebody posts a video of you beating somebody or barfing in a corner or drunk, that's the video everybody's going to see, because that's will be the only search result for you. That's a very tough
It's huge thing, especially for college kids, people that are looking to get into the job market in a few years. You know, that's the first thing you do when you go to interview someone is you do a Google search on them.
The only reason I have a job is because they didn't have all these recording devices when I was in high school.
Right?
Right.
Can you imagine if there were a picture of me floating around with a giant bong? Actually, there is, but that's... yeah. I was the one who posted that. So that, my
last weekend. Last weekend.
Yeah.
So
it was from college.
Darn it.
But that actually, in a way, that's changed mores, hasn't it? Because it's hard to find, you know, we went from President Clinton saying, I didn't inhale, to Obama saying, woohoo! Because by this time, everybody has some sort of checkered past. So to wrap up the Twitter conversation, do you think the market is right? Is Twitter headed for tough times? Or is this just a temporary blip?
I think the market is wrong. I think Twitter has a bright future.
There's something
financially
going on there.
What they did was they just also announced yesterday, and this is, I think, an underappreciated story. They acquired a retail retargeting company called Telepart. And what they do is they're about to initiate this super buy button concept where basically you'll see an ad. The ad will say buy now.
I love
you'll
that.
Click the button. They're going to turn Twitter into Amazon.
Yeah, that's
right?
That's brilliant.
Yes.
But that's in a way, really, that is an instantiation of what Twitter could be in general, which is this signaling box.
Right.
It's not just for buying things. It's for anything, for a news story or a show you're interested in. And if you follow the right signals, you get all this. And that's what makes Twitter work, is that if you follow the right signals, you get it's wonderful. If you want to know, you know, if you're watching Game of Thrones live and you want to have a conversation about it, where do you go? You don't go to Google Plus. You don't go to Facebook. You go to Twitter, because that's where real-time conversations happen. I have to say, because of this, I've been loading the Twitter page. It's much more visual than it used to be. And one of the reasons I now use, first of all, there's the green line for conversations. One of the reasons I now use the website as much as anything else, look at how visual it is.
Right.
How much more than just 140 characters it is. In fact, you get a lot of people, I'll scroll down a little bit, posting paragraphs of texts in picture form
so they can get around
the 140 character limit.
That's why I've never liked Twitter. I'm not a big Twitter fan, and I've always thought, okay, it's gonna go belly up eventually, right? As newer platforms come up, somehow they've been able to hang on to
them.
It and the thing that they've done really well, and I think this actually goes to why the stock price fell so much, is everybody sees Twitter. You watch CNN, you watch I watch Survivor,
right?
Everything that happens on Survivor, there's a hashtag for. And so they've done really well about getting out in front of people's faces with these hashtags. And then you take a look at their numbers, and you're like, holy cow, they missed their Wall Street estimate by whatever it was, $40 million. I thought they were doing well, you know, and so then you sell the stock.
Mm-hmm. By the way, I just found a link. Apple found a defect in a key component of the Apple Watch. Dow Jones has reported the story is developing, so we don't know what it is. But it has hit Apple a little bit, a drop in the stock price.
Breaking news.
Breaking news from Twitter.
Yes.
How about that, ladies and gentlemen? Here's breaking news. I just got a text from Apple I ordered, remember, 10 minutes after midnight. My bad.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. I'm sorry, Apple. I'm a bad person.
You're about 4 minutes late, too late.
Yeah. So I was able to get the 38 millimeter, which is Lisa's, because nobody apparently has small wrists. And they said my 42 wouldn't come for a few weeks. It's going to come tomorrow.
Oh.
So I've started to hear this now from people. I know this isn't the Apple Watch show, but, you know, the Apple Watch has this. It metastasizes into all of our programming.
Yes, it does. It's like a disease. and the other funny thing that we reported on Google on Tech News today this morning is that Apple has banned apps that keep time.
Yeah, well, you already have a watch. You want another one? You know why? I think because it's a side way to get different watch faces in there.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And Apple doesn't want you to do that yet. Partly because of battery life issues.
Yeah.
There was rumor that they had banned Pebble compatibility on the iPhone, but that apparently Apple's denying now.
Yeah.
So, but they have a long history. So I haven't found any defects in the Apple Watch, but if I find any, I'll let CNBC know immediately. Let's talk about Google's results, because those are in. They missed estimates. Now, this is an example. When you miss estimates, that doesn't necessarily mean a bad thing, but it means the stock market punishes you because the stock market is based on rumor. Caps costs as growth slows. Say that five times. Google caps costs as growth slows, according to the Wall Street Journal. Revenue, though, up 12%. And how's their mobile doing? Because that's the question, isn't it, with Twitter, right, with Facebook, and with Google.
Right. Well, cost per click fell 7%.
That's a trend,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. And this is another thing that I'm talking about. There's these little cracks in the online advertising world in this move to mobile. It's not as monetizable.
Just to define that means – and the way Google works with its advertising, they do an auction.
Right.
So there's no set price for a Google ad.
It's like buying an airline ticket or something like that.
Yeah.
It's flex pricing.
If you're bidding for a keyword like lawyer, you're going to pay a lot more, because there's others bidding for that. And that was really smart of Google. Mm-hmm. It was a way for Google to make sure they maximized revenue. But when you see the cost per click go down, that means that the bids are lower. People are not willing to pay as much. It means ultimately the ads are not as effective.
That's right. And the reason that's bad news for us is because in order for companies like Google to monetize mobile ads better, they're going to have to be a lot more intrusive.
Yeah.
And I'm talking auto-playing video ads. I'm talking all the stuff that people hate.
We don't want that.
Well, it's coming because that's the only way they're going to be able to monetize and continue their growth. And, of course, Google did report, you know, the growth that you mentioned. And the dollar figure on that was just under $14 billion of revenue. So that's despite what the investors are doing, Google is a incredibly wealthy company making a ton of money. That one of the most interesting things from this report, in my opinion, was that now 55% of their revenue comes from outside the U.S.
It's like Apple, too.
Well, but see,
Apple had a 30% growth mostly from China.
But this isn't from China. So Google doesn't get revenue from China. That's right. Why this is such a huge figure. I mean, before Apple was in China, which is, you know, fairly recent, before they were in, you know, China Mobile, which is the big carrier in China, and before they really made their big push into China, it was way less than that. I mean, it was, you know, in terms of their Chinese revenue. So there's 55% without, and the reason that's a big deal is because a big, big chunk of that is Europe. And Google is struggling with Europe over privacy, antitrust, and all kinds of other things.
And the euro is struggling. So
yes,
as the exchange rate for the dollar, as the dollar remains strong and the euro weakens, that means
that's a problem for all companies.
Everybody
all
loses money.
Yeah.
Yeah, all U.S.-based companies are getting less money out of Europe.
Right.
So profits were fine, right?
Yeah.
Revenue was fine. They just didn't meet analyst estimate. But there is some signs of weakness. As, you know, the falling price of Google ads is a long-term problem,
right,
that Google has to deal with.
Well, another interesting data point here is their expenses, which I'm always concerned about. They got, you know, balloons and self-driving cars and all this stuff. And I'm like, how much is this costing? You know, they're selling these inexpensive little online ads and they're paying for all this stuff. And that was a concern in past analyst reports. This time they've stabilized it to a certain extent. They did rise. Total costs and expenses rose 13% to $12.81 billion.
But look at the R&D increase.
Yes, to almost 30%.
That was a 46% increase last quarter, a 29% increase this quarter.
Yep.
That tells me, and that's a knob that Larry turns, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
That tells me that in response to the softness thing in things like ad sales, Google's saying, all right, turn up the knob. We need to find the next big thing.
Yeah. Right. And Google's pretty good at this. I mean, if you compare them to a company like Microsoft, which has excellent research, Microsoft Research is a phenomenal organization.
It is, but they've had a hard time making a product.
Exactly.
Right.
Google, right. if you look at Google Glass, for example, we've talked about it a million times. You know, they had this research project, which they turned into a big beta program, essentially, and then they steamrolled it right into a product division, and now Luxottica is going to be coming out with Google Glass, you know, hopefully a more elegant version of it.
Google Glass is not going to save Google.
But no. But my point is, look at the time from here's an idea for a research project to product. I mean, 2 years?
If you think about it, the most successful Google X project I could think of is autonomous vehicles. Will Google make any money out of that, though? It's clearly they pushed this forward. But is it Google that's going to make the profits from this? I don't think so.
Well, and they're working with all these manufacturers, right?
Do they have patents?
They must have some patents, absolutely. But it's tough. I mean, when I was at, this reminds me of Sun a little bit. We're not that far down the road with Google yet, but you know, we had all kinds of smart people working at Sun, right? Mm-hmm. And they're doing all these crazy R&D projects, which is great. But they're not monetized. Like the projects never go anywhere. At the end, we were acquiring companies that were just failing left and right.
Yeah.
Think about
Xerox PARC.
Xerox PARC.
Xerox. In fact, there's a book, How Xerox Invented the Future and Didn't Make Any Money on It, something like
right,
that.
Right, exactly.
Think about HP.
Yep.
This is a story that's more often the case than otherwise. And I think it's going to happen to the vast majority of tech companies are not going to be able to. We've talked about this on triangulation with people and so forth. There is a business cycle. There's always been a business cycle, but instead of 20 years or 50 years or 100 years, it's now 10.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And a company like Microsoft that was on top for 2 decades, there's no guarantee that third decade will keep you on top.
Right.
I have to say, and we've been watching the Build coverage today. I should mention that Mary Jo and Paul are at Build. That's why we didn't do a Windows Weekly today. We will do it Friday, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern time, 2100 UTC, day after tomorrow.
That's going to be fantastic. I saw some beer in there.
There is...
Yeah. And it's not the
beer
regular
is
beer.
Arriving. Beers have been coming in trucks. Well, I don't know who they think is going to drink this.
So
we have a sellout crowd, by the way. So if you've received a ticket from tickets at twit.tv, you're welcome. But if you haven't, there is a waiting list, but I think we're full.
Fortunately, we don't have a sellout staff. They're not a bunch of sellouts.
Never.
No, just the audience.
No, they're crack team.
Before we move on from this concept of getting research projects into products, I think an underappreciated situation at Google is Project Tango, which is just strikes
Tango?
Me, price strikes me as the perfect example. Project Tango, you've heard of it. It's a research project where you use a tablet or a smartphone to 3D map the indoor spaces very rapidly. And what's brilliant about this is something Google probably started working on seriously a year or two ago, maybe a year and a half ago, something like that. The technology is such that they have the technology to do this. And if they had smartphones that actually had this technology, they would cost $10,000 per phone. They would be like Apple phones, right? So, I mean, it would be really, really expensive, which is perfect, exactly how you want to do it. They're building these things.
Because it's a high-margin device.
Well, but it, Moore's Law, by
cheaper,
the time this
right.
thing is a product, these will be $1,000 phones, maybe.
Google, I wonder, because I feel like Google was founded by two smart guys who were cognizant of the issues of keeping a tech company on top. And from the very beginning, it wasn't, Microsoft's business was, we want a computer on every desktop running Microsoft software. That was how they started. That was their model for many, many decades. It's changed a little bit now. It had to. But Google, you could say their model there was originally to organize the world's information. They certainly said that a lot at the beginning. Perhaps they got seduced by selling ads against it, but they're really a big data company.
Yes.
I think they understand that their business is about data, about collecting it, about using it intelligently, analyzing it. So Tango is a perfect example. What is that? That's a data collection device in a smartphone.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what that is.
Yes, and basically what it can do is it can basically very rapidly build into your phone for an application, a game, or virtual reality thing. You can put this thing as with a sort of a Google Cardboard type of virtual reality thing, and you can integrate. Do Microsoft HoloLens type integrations of the 3D physical space with the game. So a ball bounces on the actual couch that's there and bounces
augmented
off the walls
reality.
Because it knows where the couch and the walls are.
Yeah.
And so this uses some very high-end graphics processing. It's very high-tech stuff, but they've got a bunch of really smart people working on it. They've got a bunch of partners working on it. And it's really exciting technology that is absolutely going to be in all of our smartphones in a few years. And Google is all over it. They've already.
What about Project Ara? I know, Jason, you'd probably talk about that a little bit more and all about Android. But that's the thing they acquired from Motorola, essentially.
Right,
it was a modular smartphone.
Build your own smartphone.
Yeah.
Yeah. People complain to me all the time that we don't talk about Project Ara enough.
Well, You know, it's going to be really, you know.
I don't want a phone that's going to rattle around in my hand.
You've got to send me to Puerto Rico next.
Falling off. That's where you get it.
That's right. They're going to have it in taco trucks in Puerto Rico. We're all going.
But I don't want to. We had that. That was the visor. Remember that? With the visor had those modules that you would put in the back. I don't want a phone with pieces falling off of it.
Well, there's actually, if you like the concept of modular phone, there's actually a product that you can invest in on Kickstarter. The news hit today. It's a product called the NexPack, so NexPaq, and it's a modular case for both iPhone and Galaxy. Now, here's what's interesting. The modules are interchangeable between the iPhone and the Android phone.
It does look like Aura, doesn't it?
It does, but this is, again, a case that'll add a speaker, it'll add a super high-powered flashlight, it'll add, like, all this different stuff to
your... Battery would be nice.
They do have that battery. As well. The battery doesn't take up the whole back like other batteries.
So there's room for other stuff.
Yeah, but it, so
how
it's
much?
Not,
pledge $39 or more, you get the special edition USB. You get one module, $75 for the SDK. Here you go, $89.
And you four modules.
And four modules.
All right, I might do that. That's not bad.
You got an SD card reader for your iPhone. Imagine that. Temperature and humidity sensors.
I don't need that.
We don't need any of this stuff, Leo.
This is obviously going to be another one of my Kickstarter boondoggles.
Here's a good one. There's a breathalyzer module. So if you want to make sure that you can drive legally.
Sure, I need that. Yeah. I'll get in the car and wonder all the time, what is my blood alcohol level? Maybe I'll back this project. I haven't wasted money on Kickstarter in a long time. What do you get for $99? Beta bundle for iPhone 6. I don't care about beta bundles.
Jason, there's a video on this. If you
They do support both the S6, which I kind of like that. January of next year. Oh, wait a minute. But for a little more money, I can get the magenta version.
Ooh.
Or do I want green?
Well, think of all the money you'll save not going to Puerto Rico.
Oh, I see. It's the trim. That is a little bit like Aura, isn't it? There's no way this is going to ever emerge from the Kickstarter.
Yeah, you'll be waiting for years. Yes, unfortunately. That's the downside of Kickstarter.
A lot of times people go to Kickstarter, as I just did, and say, oh, it's like a store. I think I'll buy the green one. And what in fact happens is nothing. Because these guys have never, I don't know, you should check. Have they ever made anything? Have they dealt with China before? Do they know what making physical objects entails? That's a challenge. That's a whole different kettle of fish. But I like the idea. So back to Google, though, and Google R&D. Some of it seems crazy, but, in almost every case, I think what's worked for Google is this undercurrent of, we just want more data.
Yes.
And we'll figure out a way to monetize. It's nice to have a business model where you could say, well, this is our underlying vision, and we don't have to judge whether we're going to make money on a R&D project, just whether it will support the underlying vision, and then we trust that the vision is well enough designed that we will make money out of it. Yeah. Does that feel like what they're doing?
I don't like to use the word vision for Google. I don't think they're a visionary company. They have a philosophy. They have a general philosophy about data, which is that there are two essential ways that they look at the world that's different. The first one, and this goes back to Larry and Sergey, they think big, 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 big. Somebody will say, "Hey, let's build like maybe we should build like a little satellite and put it in space." And they'll say, "No, let's build a space elevator." They think just gigantic in terms of and you see this in all the books, especially like In the Plex, all the books about Google. They just take everything that normal people think about and they multiply it by 100. And say, let's do that.
Yeah,
and that's why their R&D budget is billions.
But Leo, I think you have a really good point. If you look at what they've done well, it goes all the way back to the beginning to the search engine, right?
Right.
Tons of data. They've done really well at that.
Yeah.
You look at, my brain just went. You look at what they did, like things
Android
like
was
YouTube. Well, Android's like the third iteration. If you look at what they're doing now with things like the Google Now integration, which they just announced they're doing more integration from apps to Google Now.
And Google as an ISP facilitates that, both terrestrial and mobile, because they've got Google Fi now.
Right.
They have Google Gigabit in some cities.
Ads, that was it. Ads is the second wave, right? So you got the browser, right? Yep. Search engines first, then ads.
Then ads.
Now Android.
Yep.
And if you look at it, I think it's somewhere in the rundown.
Chrome,
they want to own end to end.
They can gather data from all of that.
It's the big data gathering points.
But
right?
It's data on you. And do you think there's pushback now from society? In fact, somebody in the chat room is saying that it's coming to an end, says RF2020. Privacy by design is becoming necessary. And isn't that antithetical to what Google wants?
I don't know.
I have been very publicly embracing this notion of I'll give you everything you want, Google, because I feel like I'm getting my money's worth out of Google. In other words, I don't care what Google knows about me.
Right.
It's not like I'm going to see more ads. I already see ads on every surface. It's a Philip K. Dick universe already.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if they're more targeted, that's better as far as I'm concerned. At least I won't see ads for
things I can't
use.
But are they better targeted?
I don't think they're. That's why I want to give them more information. I want to help you, Google. I want your ads to be better targeted.
Well, that's why this Google Now thing, I think, is so important and
I
cool in what they're
now.
Doing,
yeah.
right?
I love
so Google, they want Google Now to become your interface. This is the interface to my world. This is the place where I spend my first minute of the day or that minute where I just want to know what's going on. They want to take your eyeballs and dump them into Google Now. Mm-hmm. And the way that they're doing that is making it more relevant by pulling this information from the app.
Google Now tells me when a bill is going to be due.
Yeah.
Like tomorrow your PG&E bill is due. That's useful
stuff. The reason we're so excited about Google Now is it's the one rare example where contextual information actually works.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at, I saw ads on, I think it was YouTube today. It was in another language. I didn't even recognize the language. How do they not know that I don't speak whatever that language is?
Right.
Wow, look at this. Spotify.
All kinds of stuff.
Feedly.
70 relationships.
When is that? So this is new integration.
This is new.
They added
Wonderlist.
70 new
How do I turn that on?
Well, I think it'll
You install the app.
So if I have, I use Wonderlist as my to-do list, or I have Pandora or Kayak or Waze, but I have, by virtue of having that app installed, somehow Google Now will now say that's a signal,
Right. The developers of those apps have tapped into Google Now and will feed that information in certain ways. There's also this bottom half of this entire gigantic list is Now cards from Gmail markup. These are all the companies, you know, all the partners that when you get an email from them with any sort of information feeds into Google Now in helpful ways, like your travel and all that stuff.
This can be troubling, though, because if Google Now has 1,000 cards every time I go there, this is just my inbox.
I am not worried about that because every time I go to Google Now, I'm like, give me more.
Here's an example. So I got a card, Android 5.0 Lollipop update for the Galaxy S5, Galaxy Note 4, and it's saying, is this card useful right now?
Mm-hmm.
So I can... I'm always nervous about this because I don't want to say no because maybe I won't. I mean, it's kind of semi-useful.
Right.
What should I do now?
Well, that's the question. But you know, I got a card.
Oh, I'll say
from,
yes. What the heck?
So just go ahead and say yes. And
here's restaurants nearby. I'm not getting all of those cool integrations.
I got one because Jason contacted me to come be a host, right? A co-host on the show, and it said, "Is this something you're interested in following?" And when I said yes, it went ahead and set up the appointment on my calendar and did all this great. So it's like one-click integration to everything
I
want to do.
People, their reaction is going to be, how did it know that? It read my email. What the hell?
Yeah.
Don't you think that's the kind of reaction people are going to have about that?
As long as I don't have to read my email.
Some people will. Other people will be glad to give that
I'm
up
thrilled.
For the convenience factor.
Exactly.
It's all about the convenience factor.
Yeah. I'm thrilled. Here's the very first card is, of course, this show. And there's a button, which I like. That seems new. Email everyone. So I can now email everybody who's attached to that appointment if I am running late.
If there are any.
Yep. If there are any. Actually, it's just you, Jason.
Go ahead. Send me an email.
I use AnyDo, which... and
I love
AnyDo,
yeah.
Google Now integration with AnyDo. So now, you know, if I have a reminder, it'll pop up on Google Now, which is nice.
So is that just going to now just happen? How does that... Because I have most of those apps or many of those apps.
You know, the one thing that I don't know is whether there's an update to Google Search that has to roll out for that to be enabled.
Sure,
and I think that is the case, which will happen in the next week or two.
This is, you know, it's really interesting. In every case, we've been covering Google very closely now for 10 years. In every case, I think, oh, they've got this great new stuff. I can't wait. Face recognition.
Yeah.
Which you know they're good at. But they haven't. They're slow to roll some of this stuff out.
Yeah.
I guess it's probably prudent.
they put this amazing technology on Google Plus where they could recognize whether it was a dog or a cat, the picture, whether it was a baby or an adult, whether you're smiling or not smiling. Where is it? I don't know. It's like useless in Google Plus if it's still there. Nobody uses it as far as I know. But it's amazing. You know?
So somebody's saying you can turn apps on or off in the Google Now settings. There's a downloaded apps section. All right. Well, let me take a look at that. So now cards.
I mean, there have been some apps already tapping into Google Now. So this is not the beginning of it.
Manage
this is just a broadening
history,
of
delete
it.
Card purposes. I think that this is maybe you have a newer version than I have because I don't see that in my settings.
I haven't seen an update to my search app, and I'm pretty positive that's what's going to be required in order to get some of these changes.
Do you see it?
I see customize Google Now.
Oh, should I go to the customize?
So if you go to
that's a different menu.
Click on the hamburger.
Yeah.
And then you should have customize if you click on the click on that.
On the hamburger.
Yeah.
Customize. All right, let's see what's in here. Come here, baby. All right. This is, by the way, the
download apps.
There we go. So here's sports, stocks, places. This is where you control this. This is much like Cortana on Windows Phone, where when you first set up Cortana, the speech recognition in Windows Phone, you tell her your interests, what you want to know about. The disadvantage Microsoft has is unless you're using Bing all the time and you're really in the Microsoft ecosystem, they're not going to know as much about you. Yep. It's interesting. It's becoming a Microsoft versus Google war here.
Right. Who are you more plugged into?
So, receive Now cards from your downloaded apps? Yes. Oh, so I can turn this on. Continuing receiving Now cards from Waze? Yes. So it hasn't yet populated this individual apps, but I have turned that on. All right, thank you. So it is in there. It is in there. Very interesting.
They're starting to surface cards in Google Now where if you're driving and it knows you're driving, it will tell you, gas stations that are on your route.
It should say, put your phone away, you nitwit.
That's what it should say.
And Google would never do that.
And the parking one I think has been out for a little bit, but I'm getting
I love that.
Yeah.
I love parking. It says you parked and here's where you parked. Yeah.
So I get parking.
It's a map of where you parked.
Parking locations. My son does a lot of Team Fortress 2. So I get, and he plays sometimes, it connects to mine.
He's playing on your Steam account.
Team Fortress 2, exactly.
Yeah, that's problem. Exactly right. I have the same problem.
Yeah.
But you know, I like it because it makes me look like a better gamer than
I am. It does, doesn't it? Yeah.
I got thousands of points or whatever, achievements. Yeah. Man, you're good at TF2. Yeah. Yes, I am pretty good.
Yes, I am.
I am. I'm almost as good as a 12-year-old boy. Look at this added quite a bit, actually. So that's cool.
Yeah. Again, that's the big data, right? I mean, that's the data analysis that they can do. They're plugging into anything and everything to get in front of you more often.
Keep track of this event. I get a lot of event in my email. So you can say whether your stories to read. You know what? This is pretty amazing now, I tell you.
Yeah.
The next thing is to put this, I don't know, in some sort of head-mounted display.
That's the problem with Google Now. It's never right there unless you have a Chromebook. Now it's on the Chromebook when you open the Chromebook.
Affordable.
There it is.
Yeah.
But yeah, you always have to remember to go find it, and that's just not how this should work.
Mm-hmm.
If you use the Google Launcher on Android, you swipe left from the home page, and there's your Google Now cards. And maybe that's one of the ways to do it.
Such a hassle.
I love the Chromebook. I'm sorry, but that's one reason a Chromebook is a great choice. If you're in the Googleverse, which obviously we are sucked into the Googleverse.
Yep.
All right, let's take a break. I want to see your Aaron's Arcade. Aaron Newcomb is a maker.
Yep.
And the last time we saw a project of yours, you had an old-time radio.
Right.
That was playing old-time radio shows.
Yep.
Like Lawrence Welk. And out of an old-time radio, but it was over the internet from a Raspberry Pi. So let's see what he's got here. Aaron's Arcade. But first, a word from Braintree. If you're a mobile developer, you must know about Braintree. If you're a mobile developer, you need to know about Braintree. Braintree is a payments API. If you go to BraintreePayments.com, you can find out all about it. That makes it very easy for you. Well, let's say you've got a mobile app and you want to accept payments. Would you like to accept, I don't know, Bitcoin? Sure, no problem. Apple Pay, of course. PayPal, yeah. Credit cards of any kind, yes. Venmo, you know about that? That's awesome. Yeah. They accept it all, and it's with a couple of lines of code in your app. That's what I love about this. The payments API is used by so many great companies. They're used by Uber and Lyft, You know it must be good if Uber and Lyft use it, and Airbnb, and Living Social. GitHub started when they first started taking payments with Braintree, and Braintree's grown with them. They can start from one transaction a day to millions a day, then grow with you. And right now, if you want to try it, we're going to give you a great deal for a startup, for somebody who's just getting going. Your first $50,000 in transactions are fee-free. So that really gives you a chance to get going. And, by the time you're getting $50,000 in transactions, you're ready. You're doing it. BraintreePayments.com/twig to get that special offer. BraintreePayments.com/twig. When you create an account, you'll be able to use their sandbox to actually see what your app would look like with Braintree. It works with all the languages, Node, and everything that you use, .NET. Makes it very, very easy. BraintreePayments.com. I think 7 different programming languages. Hmm. And look at all the companies that use Braintree. StubHub uses Braintree. Unrelated to GitHub. Airbnb, hotels tonight, the travel industry. I love it. BraintreePayments.com/twig. I want you to check it out if you want to take payments. And by the way, fast payouts and great support. This is the place. From your first dollar to your billionth, BraintreePayments.com/twig. First $50,000. Fee-free. Pretty good deal. Google's offering to buy patents. I like this.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
At first I thought, oh, great, they want to be in the patent troll business. Then I thought, no, that's not it at all.
Right.
They're taking these patents off the market.
Right.
From trolls. Yep.
From trolls.
Because what happens is if you have a patent and you want to monetize it, you're not gonna sue Google, right? So you're gonna go find a patent troll who's gonna pay you a ton of money, and then they're gonna sue Google, and Google says, you know what? Let's just skip all that.
Let's just eliminate the middleman.
Right. If we might use it sometime in the future, we'll buy it. So they're having tryouts. There's 2 weeks during the month of May when you can go and submit your patent. Say, here's our patent. They'll check it out, and by sometime in June, I think it is.
Love this.
June 26th, they will tell you yes or no about whether or not they'll buy your patent.
I love this.
Yeah. And they said, think of it like a 20% project for Google's patent lawyers. So
give them a little something to do with their free time.
That's right.
Have you received a Project Fi invite? Has anybody yet? Do we know anybody who has?
I haven't got an invite.
No.
We all applied, not, I presume.
Yes. I haven't heard of any invites.
You're using a Nexus 6,
I actually
right?
have a Nexus 6, but I couldn't
so does
apply
Jason.
For yeah. it because it goes through my work.
I was bluffing.
Oh,
I
have an iPhone. You have your Google for Work account.
It's for NetApp. They pay for my bill and all that kind of stuff.
So you can't apply for it?
I can't apply for
you
it.
You can apply for it and then get your own Nexus 6.
I'd have to expense my bill or get my own
They have pay. You can make payments on it. So you can. One of the options is checkbox
option. Right, over 2 years.
They'll send you the phone. And then you pay for it. It's like T-Mobile 20, or something.
20 bucks a month
right.
for 2 years.
Yeah.
Something
yeah.
Like that.
Yeah. You can do a subsidy.
I have a Nexus 6 just, waiting. I hope I love the idea. It's not much cheaper when you add it all up. It's pretty much the same as I'm already paying.
But you get the carryover.
Right.
Which is the best part. Right.
Right.
So, yeah, if you look at the month to month, it's not much cheaper. In some cases, it's more expensive. But because you get that carryover, you can kind of budget for that worst case month of the 5 gig month.
Right.
And then every other month you're only doing 3 gigs. So you get that, your bill gets lowered every other month. So I think it's great.
If you travel a lot, it's a great idea because it's, again, there's no contract. So you can just like cancel it and then go back to it and you can go back and forth depending on what's favorable.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But, I think what's going to hurt them out of the gate is the Nexus 6. You have to have a Nexus 6.
Yeah.
Maybe another phone from Huawei or somebody else. We'll see what happens. But, that right out of the gate, is everyone – part of their earnings announcement we just talked about was the slip in Nexus, their Nexus brand.
Yeah.
So the Nexus 6 apparently isn't doing too well.
Sales are dropping.
Sales are dropping. And yet they're trying to roll out Google Fi and say you have to have a Nexus 6.
See, nobody wants a Nexus 6. That's really the problem.
I do, but
it's all about the price. It's all about the price.
Why do you like the Nexus 6? Well, the Nexus 6 is not a cheap – Nexus phone.
Exactly.
It's
the not, Nexus no. 5 was
it was.
Six, yeah. 4 was, or the
Frankly,
5 I guess it was super
was.
Cheap.
If you want a Nexus, buy a
and
OnePlus
the 7 was
1.
Cheap.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It, now with Lollipop on it, the Oxygen OS is basically pure Lollipop.
Yeah.
And it's $350. It's a Nexus priced phone.
I think they'll extend it to Android generally at some point.
Yeah, or release new phones that support
I think,
it.
Is it a hardware? I think it's a hardware issue. I think you have to have a phone that could support
it. It's a phone that's
handoff.
Fast enough to do the handoff between Wi-Fi and the two different cellular networks. I mean, and that's what gets me is even on my Nexus 6, I have a hard time. I leave the house and sometimes it thinks I'm still connected to Wi-Fi and I have to go in and manually turn Wi-Fi off.
Every day I do that.
You do. So, yeah. I mean, is this going to be a problem then on Google Fi?
It's not supposed to
if
be.
If it doesn't work, you know, right now, how is it going to automatically
switch networks? Well, so this Edge, the S6 Edge, is a T-Mobile phone. Mm-hmm. So it does Wi-Fi calling.
You can do the Wi-Fi calling.
And it's just completely transparent. Just goes, I walk out the door, call continues, picks up on the cell network. T-Mobile happens to be very good in mm-hmm. Petaluma, so mm-hmm. I don't care if Sprint is there or not. It tells me when I'm on Wi-Fi immediately, calls will be made over Wi-Fi. And I can, of course, turn that off if I want. But why? So the settings in this are Wi-Fi preferred, cellular network preferred, never use cellular network, or just turn it off entirely.
Right.
And it works well. So Google did put an app in the App Store. I don't know if you applied for an invite and install the app. Do you think you have a better shot at it? The app does nothing.
No. I wondered about that. Like, does that signal that you're even more serious your Nexus 6?
I'm going to install it on my no-carrier Motorola Nexus 6. That should tell them. Right.
Well,
I'm sitting here waiting for you, Google.
Right.
I'm
wearing your Google Glass
T-shirt. Maybe. Actually, there's no point installing it on the Edge because it will only work with the Nexus 6. Okay.
Right. It actually lets you, though?
Yeah, that's surprising.
Let me see. It's not grayed out. T-Mobile, Samsung.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so I'll install it on this too. I don't know what'll happen. Congratulations. Here's an app that will never do anything.
Right. Now there's an obvious flaw, right?
You can use this to activate your Project Fi service, to manage your account and settings, check your data usage, see your monthly statements, or get in touch with support.
Apps nowadays are just all about mind share. It's like a little ad. Look at Apple. Yeah. It's like all the iPhones you have, Apple Watch icons, and they even have the feature if you walk into if you walk into Starbucks, they use ID.
This happened to me. I was next door to Starbucks and a little Starbucks icon popped up.
Yeah.
What the hell? I don't want that.
I
signed up anyway. It does it in the handoff. So when your iPhone is turned off, this is a new thing they added. I have an icon for a camera there, but little Starbucks icon popped up because I was near a Starbucks. And I just had to see, what do they want? And then they said, on your birthday, we'll give you a free coffee.
Oh.
So I signed up.
It's not an ad. It's a feature.
Yeah, that's a feature.
In their defense, I had already installed the Starbucks app in my passbook.
See, but if you hadn't, it would have suggested it.
Here, really? It would tap still pop
here
up?
It would say tap here to download the app.
That's criminal.
Yeah.
That's just this. But, talk about Philip K. Dick advertising everywhere every surface. Like
the technology they're using is Apple iBeacon.
Yeah.
So
because I was next door to the Starbucks, so it wasn't in the Starbucks, but it was close enough, I guess, that iBeacon thought I was
close enough.
Wow. But you know, Google will do that, right?
Well, they right now Google Wallet will pull up your loyalty cards if you're nearby, and it does that based on location, though.
Right.
You know, it says, I see you're near CVS.
Does it pull it up without me going into the wallet?
Yeah.
Oh, so just
I get a notification.
Exactly the same thing.
Yeah, I get a note. Well, but it's not signing up for anything. It's just saying you've already registered this loyalty card with in the app. So would you like to use it? It's like a shortcut, which is kind of nice because, I don't know why, but
it's nice.
That big long CVS receipt, you got to make it as long as possible. So you have to use your loyalty card a lot.
All right. What else here? Oh, sad story. Of course, we all heard about the tragedy in Nepal. Mm-hmm. More than 2,500 deaths so far. Actually, more than 5,000, I think, the last count I saw.
Yeah.
And one of them, a Google executive, was in charge of privacy at Project X. We were talking about Google's R&D arm. Dan Fredenberg, friend to many people I know. I didn't know Dan myself, but a lot of people posting this. His sister posted on his Instagram account saying that he had died. He was at base camp. I guess preparing to climb Everest. He was the big Everest season begins in a couple of weeks, so people are already at base camp getting acclimated to the oxygen. He was there. There was a massive, I don't know if you've seen the YouTube video, but a dramatic video of a massive avalanche.
I saw that.
Onto base camp.
Oh, man. Scary.
17 climbers killed, including Mr. Fredenberg. So a sad story. Google has done their People Finder again, which is great for Nepal. That is a huge benefit. You know, my son, a kid that we know he grew up with, was in Nepal.
Wow.
Saturday, Spencer's mom called and said, Spencer's out of, we don't know where he is. He's out of touch. Here's this video. Please, this is very dramatic. If avert your eyes if There's no blood and guts, but it's pretty terrifying.
But it is terrifying.
What it shows is that there was literally nowhere to run.
Yeah.
Basically,
it's my worst nightmare.
If a rock got you, you were done for. And if it didn't, you were lucky.
Right.
And that was it.
Huge avalanche of snow. That's a wall of snow. And that'll give you nightmares. And there you go.
Yeah.
Anyway, Spencer did call by sat phone yesterday and reported in, and he's okay. So, we had talked to Chris Marquardt on Saturday on the radio show. He was very worried about a Nepalese friend of his who ran a very popular cafe in Kathmandu, had not been heard from, but he was heard from. And one of the things a lot of people are using is facebook.com/safety check. Have you seen this?
No.
This is Facebook started to do it this last year after another natural disaster. It knows where you are. So if you're in the affected area, it will pop up a thing saying post a status update to let your friends know you're okay. Yeah. And if you're not, you can see how your friends are. And it says here, none of my friends appear to be in the affected area. I asked Chris Marquardt about this. I said, Kathmandu and Nepal in general, very poor country. He said, yes, but they're all on Facebook on their phones.
Mm. Yeah.
So this is actually a huge value in case of an emergency.
Yep.
And, of course, we encourage people to donate, to contribute. There are lots of good charities. Apple has put a Red Cross donation button, as they've done in the past, on their iTunes store. I see you have a site, Direct Relief.
Yeah, this is the one I donated to. It's Direct Relief, just directrelief.org. And they've pledged there for the earthquake situation in Nepal. They're going to donate every single bit of money that's donated to relief and recovery efforts. And they've done this for a lot of other natural disasters and donation opportunities that exist. So I would highly recommend going to directrelief.org and donating there if you haven't done so already.
I will. That's great. A 5-star charity from Charity Navigator.
Yep.
And I love giving to a charity where the vast majority, in this case, 100%, go to.
And I believe that. I mean, that's why they're called Direct Relief.
Direct Relief.
That's their mission is to use as much money that's donated as possible to go towards the relief effort of whatever the situation is.
Some people want to go rushing to disaster areas to help. Never do that. Always stay home and send money.
Let the NGOs, the trained professionals, the Red Cross, UNICEF, the people who know what to do and how to do it, let them do it. You don't want to cause chaos. Good. That's a great tip. Directrelief.org and our sympathy to Dan's family and friends.
Absolutely.
A lot of people knew Dan, and he was very much liked. It's kind of a great tragedy, but one of many thousands of tragedies in Nepal right now. Have you started using notes and directions from search on desktop? This is weird. You could send it to your phone. So you do a search. Tell me how this works. I do a search for directions.
Yeah, so if you go to Google, just open up a Google. I think this is what we're talking about.
Okay.
Just open up a Google.
Google.com.
Yep. Type in send directions.
Send directions.
I actually tried this earlier. It's so cool.
Yeah, it
That's it. Just send directions.
That's it? Oh, I said direct.
That's okay. It Google knows, right?
So here's my phone's location. Now, this is interesting because this is on my desktop.
Mm-hmm.
But it knows where my phone is. And by the way, because I have many phones, I can choose.
Yep.
But it's looking at the Galaxy S6. Where do I want to go? Let's see. I want to go to Redding, California, right now. It'll do the directions, and now
and
I press
the bottom. Just hit
send directions to my phone.
Yep.
You know, I do that all the time. It's funny. I use like Push Bullet and things like that to do that third party applications directions.
Your phone should buzz. Did it buzz?
Hasn't buzzed me yet.
Mine buzzed almost immediately when I did it earlier today. I was like very impressed.
Unfortunately, Project Fi has stopped.
Oh,
so you should sign up for it.
There it is.
Got it. Look at that. It says pull up for details about this place. And there it is. There's directions to Reading. I like that.
Very cool. I love
very
it.
Very quick and easy.
You can also use the search bar to set reminders and alarms.
Yep.
And send that to your phone.
And of course, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. You can search for your phone. Mm-hmm. Where is my phone?
Right. Find my phone.
Find my device. Yeah. Find my phone.
This all makes sense. And again, this is the ecosystem play. And I hate it if it's a closed ecosystem. You know, we talk about Apple's ecosystem. It's a lock-in. Is this a lock-in to Google? It certainly incents you.
I would be more inclined to blame Apple. I bet you that Google would love to have this support
on Apple,
but they're the ones, and this is the biggest thing that sucks about the iPhone and Apple is that they are so anti-Google. They're irrationally harming users by, because the best experience, in my opinion, is an Apple device with all the Google stuff.
You carry an iPhone.
Yeah. Carry an iPhone. But I want Google Now to be more integrated. I want all these other integrations. I don't want to have Bing come up as the default when I search for things. I don't want Twitter and Facebook to be the default with no possibility of using Google Plus.
Right.
And it's one of those things where they've got this like bee in their bonnet about this other company.
Yeah, by default, if I search on my watch, Bing.
Yeah. I want to search Google search. Right. Yeah. I want to use Google Maps. That, right? I want the googly stuff
now,
on my
to be
Apple
fair,
device.
Google does the same thing to Windows Phone.
Well, but Windows
to
Phone,
be fair,
Windows Phone has no market share. I mean, they have a business reason
well,
for that.
I guess. You know? I mean, I'd be much more likely to use Windows Phone if it supported all my Google services, but it doesn't. So what do I use? I use Android.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really, by the way, schizophrenic because I want to use the Apple Watch, and so I have to carry two phones.
You have two pockets. You have two arms.
You know, I feel like I. You know, and I've talked about this. The Apple Watch is easily the most attractive. It's designed by the two of the best designers in the world, Mark Newsom and Johnny Ive.
I disagree.
Well, a lot of people think it's not attractive. I think it's attractive, but that's a matter of taste.
It's like a chiclet.
It's very Johnny Ivey.
It's Johnny Ivey.
It looks like it's from the 70s.
Okay.
I'm
I
sorry
like
to
it.
Derail your point, though.
But my actual point is the guts, the functionality is not particularly ahead of Android Wear in any in any particular way.
Oh, until about a half an hour ago, I would have disagreed with that.
Oh, but that's because you just used Apple Pay at the Petaluma Market.
I think the Taptic engine is brilliant, but it turns out that it's the Taptic engine that's broken on
this thing.
That's
the broken part.
Yeah, that's the broken part. And that's what's delaying our watches.
Well, apparently one of the two Chinese suppliers for the, by the way, the Taptic thing, it's just a buzzer. It's not that different. Do you have an Apple Watch?
No.
Trust me. It's a buzzer. I thought it was going to do all these fancy, like, it would buzz my left wrist for a left turn or right. No, it's just it goes zzz. It's just a zzz. Anyway, it's not the Taptic engine. But anyway, the buzzer.
It's marketing.
Was probably apparently part of the problem. Yes, very, very, very good marketing.
Mm-hmm.
Was apparently part of the problem in that, but not all of them are flawed. And apparently they are, as I said, I'm getting mine in the 2 or 3 weeks before they said it would come. So I think that whatever that problem was has been solved. That's what CNBC was reporting. This Apple Pay is the biggest difference.
Yeah.
But I feel like Android Wear in the next iteration can in every respect duplicate what they've done with this, except maybe looks.
Yeah.
But that's just going to be a question of somebody coming along and designing a better looking watch.
It also has to be said that there's no Android Wear watch with anywhere near the quality of display.
Yes.
Well, you know, there. That's true because for some reason all the Android Wear watches use LCD, IPS LCDs. Yeah. This is OLED. It's funny. It's Apple's first OLED.
Right.
So OLED's been in Android in many respects, in so many ways for so long. And finally, and it's still not OLED on the iPhone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For the first OLED display, and you're right, it's gorgeous. But Samsung has used OLED displays for its Gear watches, and they look great. And I think...
LG going to be OLED?
Yeah, what you're going to see is now that Apple has said, okay, here's our... They didn't go so far ahead that Android can't come up. Android Wear can't come up with some very compatible.
Does it do Wi-Fi?
This does Wi-Fi.
Okay. Yep.
This does low power Bluetooth, Bluetooth LA until it can't, or there's it needs more data. Then it'll go to Wi-Fi.
Oh, that's good.
Much like Android Wear will do. One thing Android Wear does do in the new iteration, which we haven't seen yet, but supposedly is just as this Apple Watch will talk to the iPhone anywhere on the local. Wi-Fi network to any Apple phone or to my Apple phone, Android Wear will do it over the public internet, which is great. I could leave my Android phone at home and my Android Wear watch would still communicate with it. I feel like what's going on is much like with the phones, it's neck and neck. And on any given day, any horse could win.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And now, well, that's good for consumers because, I mean, it gives consumers choice. It gives consumers options that they might not have. I think that there's some real similarities in the platforms. And I'm very interested to see what the next Android generation of Android Wear
Do you think that the price of the Apple Watch will affect the Android watches? Will they go up in price?
No.
Or go down in
price?
No,
that's much like the phones. It'll be just like the opportunity. Phones. There may be some high-end Android Wear. But, you know, remember the Apple Watch starts at $350.
Yeah.
That's only $100 more than the most expensive.
It's not crazy, but I'm surprised they don't
have... And another $250 when you break it. When you break the screen, because it's break not the Sapphire. Screen.
Hey, if you break the screen, that's your problem. It's not Apple's problem. You broke your screen.
I've already scheduled the breaking of my screen. One thing that's also we learned from the iFixit teardown is that the battery is actually weaker than your average Android Wear battery, but gets comparable battery life. So they're doing some really interesting kung fu there with the battery.
I think part of that's the OLED, by the way.
Part of it's
OLEDs are much more efficient screens.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're, you know, Apple's, you know what? I get much better battery life on my iPhones than I do on my Android phones. Galaxy Edge, iPhone, comparable batteries, comparable usage, 80% on the iPhone 6, 55% left on the S6. And here we are at 2 in the afternoon. I still have some hours to go. I think Apple knows, you know, when you have a closed ecosystem,
right, exactly,
you can do better.
Yeah.
Because you can limit things. For instance, there's only 9 watch faces, and they're all OLED friendly. You're not letting third-party watch faces on the Apple Watch because they could kill your battery life.
Yep.
Android Wear, Pebble, thousands of ugly choices.
Yeah.
Thousands. but I think that's great.
Yeah.
You'd get to choose. You want choice. You want the Apple way. You get to choose.
If you hate all that money in your pocket,
I'm surprised. You, given that you love Google, are using an iPhone. You were using an Android phone
I'm
before.
Using an iPhone specifically so that I could use the Apple Watch. I've been excited about the Apple Watch for a long, long time, and I always felt that Apple would come out with a really great watch.
So can I send you a heartbeat when you get yours?
Yes. Would you?
A little drawing.
That would be wonderful.
Renee Ritchie has been sending me Batman heads. It's the most useless feature of all. But now that mine's coming tomorrow, I can send them to Lisa. We'll see. I can send little hearts and flowers.
I can't wait till mine comes. They sent me an email yesterday that said the Apple Watch is here, and I thought they were talking about my Apple Watch.
No, don't get your hopes up. What, was that me?
That was from me.
Okay. I should have known. I didn't get a tap. A wrist tap. We did have a change log. We've kind of encroached a little bit in the change log. Let me take a look and see if we've got anything else. Password Alert Chrome extension. This comes from Google. Combats phishing and risk from password reuse when you enter your Google password in a non-Google site. Is that all it's going to do is check and see if it's the same password as my Google password? Because that's stupid.
No, it's going to do a number of things. It's just general password management.
Is it? That's what I'd love to see is a LastPass equivalent.
If somebody in Eastern Europe uses your password to log in somewhere, pops up right in the middle of your screen.
Oh, I like that.
And says, hey, watch out. It also, if you go to a page that's been spoofed or faked, that's asking for a password, it will say, don't enter your password in this page. This is not the right page.
That's not the page you're looking for.
Because that's an increasing problem there. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like been commoditized tools for duplicating website pages.
Yeah.
And so, of course, the main thing they're after is to harvest your usernames and passwords.
So is that available now in the...
It is. Yeah.
Let me go to the extension store and install it.
Yeah.
Sounds like there's no reason not to. Although you do want to be careful about...
it's called Password Alert.
Too many extensions.
Password Alert. And exactly. I mean, the extensions in Chrome are just like the biggest, aspect of my machine.
Yeah, I've had to be a little judicious. The other thing that happens is it installs on every machine.
Yeah.
There it is. Google.com Password Alert helps protect you against phishing.
And it's open source.
It's open source.
Yep. And free.
And free. All right.
So it sounds like this would be something good for businesses as well.
Yeah, right. You'd think IT would love to install this everywhere.
So many businesses are using Chrome because they finally figured out that Internet Explorer is so insecure. And then at the same time, a lot of people at work are browsing public, Facebook and all these public sites. It seems like this would be a perfect thing for people to just auto push out to all their employees, like make sure you're not going to the fake Facebook site and using your corporate password as your password for Facebook and all that stuff. So
doesn't seem to have allow in incognito, allow access to file URLs. Doesn't seem to have any icon on the toolbar. I guess it just sits there and it'll notify me. You do have to sign in your Google account, which I just did when you install it. Okay, that's cool. Chrome dev for Android app released. Oh, this is the Canary release. Is that what this is?
Yeah, that's what it is. Chrome Canary for Android, basically.
Okay. And there was an update to Google Play services. Do we know what that did? Oh, I know one thing it did. You can now have more than one watch. I don't know what the use case is, but
it's called the Leo Laporte feature.
Yeah, right.
Do you want more than one? I guess maybe this video will explain.
Well, now Android Wear is supposedly not going to be just for watches, right?
Right.
It's the wearable operating
so
system.
So I could have Android Wear in my glass and my watch,
and your That's smart what this is. Underwear, and your like whatever.
That's what this is. What is he talking about here?
Play services 7.3. Get to work.
That's right.
This is worthy of a Microsoft video.
I was just going
to
say.
Welcome to release 7.3 of Google Play services.
Magnus,
and as usual, we packed it with lots of new features.
Yeah, he does all the Google Play services update videos.
He's kind of cute.
What this is all about.
It's very, very geeky but fun.
Wear is that you can now connect multiple wearables to a phone. Let's check that out. I can't decide which wearable I'm going to wear today. I kind of like that black one. That one is better if I'm going
to. It is the case that people in the real world have multiple watches. So that would be nice.
Hot dog, since I have Google Play Services 7.3 installed, I can wear them all at the same time.
So
this capability allows you to create a network of wearable nodes, all connected to a single phone.
Look how many watches he has. That's hilarious.
Look how big that Nexus 6 looks. That's hilarious.
In the Wear data.
But you know, this is really the future of wearable computing. Wearable computing is not having a wearable device.
I agree. Yeah. I think you're right.
It's a personal area network, and you have different sensors in different places doing different things for different reasons.
Yeah.
Well, and not only are they connecting to the phone, they're connecting to each other.
I know. My old man. Dirty old man kicked in there for a little bit.
Yeah.
But yes,
what are you thinking about, Mr. Maker Man? The LG Watch Urbane is now in the Google Store.
Oh, it is.
Yeah. Classic timepiece crafted. So if you've been looking for a better design watch, $350.
Well,
see, there you go. Apple Watch price. Ultra clear display from any angle. It is OLED. So there you go. Yep. Answers that question. All right. There you go.
I'm rooting for LG. You know, they just came out with a really cool phone.
You like the G4? Have you taken a look at it?
I like the color scanner. There's a scanner that basically, it's a little sensor that's right next to the camera that basically does a quick check on the lighting conditions. Mm. And they also do object recognition. So if you're taking a picture of an apple, it'll check the lights. It'll recognize it as an apple and like, okay, here's what color the apple should be given these...
Yeah,
this context.
It's like an auto white.
Yeah, it was,
love that idea.
Really impressive. Actually, Miriam Jouar was on All About Android.
She brought one
last night.
Yeah,
she brought one.
Did you play with it?
A little bit. She had only had it for a couple of hours, but had taken some shots, and I could kind of show you. This was in a super dark room.
Wow.
She said this picture exactly matched how it looked when she took the picture to her eyes.
Hmm. Sometimes, really that's impressive nice stuff. Because sometimes they over-amplify it and it's
and
brighter.
And this is enhanced, yeah. There you go. This that's is kind of like ratcheting it up.
She needs to clean up her room a
They need bit. To add voice command. So you say enhance and have it.
Right. Center, zoom, enhance.
Let's see here.
It has laser focusing, and that's one thing maybe would be better in low light. You know, focusing is always tough.
But look at that.
The detail. I mean, the detail is unbelievable on some of these. So this, let's see here. Let's switch to this photo.
Perfect.
This is a macro. This is the normal shot, right?
Fiddlehead ferns.
That's
gorgeous.
Really incredible. Everything that we saw on the photo features of this definitely at least put it at the same level as the S6. But they're duking it out. There's going to be a ton of matchups between these two side-by-side comparisons. And at this point, this is a big contender. I mean, the detail is just incredible.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah. Really, really nice shots.
Yeah.
Don't do this while you're driving. But yeah. So there you go.
Very cool. Come on, LG. You can do it.
Well, I just ordered a LG Watch Urbane just to help them along. Why not? I decided to get the gold so it would compete well with the Apple Watch. I can't afford a gold Apple Watch. It looks pretty nice.
Yeah.
It looks like a real watch, but that's not a real watch face, right? That's just the OLED screen.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have a flat tire. It's round.
It's completely round.
It goes all the way around.
Yep.
Goes to 11.
It's one better.
And it's got the Wi-Fi.
It's got the Wi-Fi. All right.
So
nice.
Let's look at the specs.
And that's a superior to Apple's
66 grams. That's fairly heavy. That's heavier than an Apple Watch. Gold with brown leather, silver with black leather, stainless steel cover, Corning Gorilla Glass 3. Of course, that's the same glass used on the sport watches for the iPhone.
Yep.
4 gigs of storage. I was surprised the Apple Watch has 6 gigs. It says because significant storage. Wow. P-OLED screen at 1.3 inches. It is similar to the Apple Watch, 320 by 320, 245 PPI. It does have a microphone, but all Android Wear watches do.
Does it have a speaker?
It does not have a speaker, apparently. And it does support Wi-Fi and Bluetooth LE. On 1.2 gigahertz. Oh, a big battery, 410 milliamp hours.
Mm-hmm. So it should run for a while.
That's double
the Apple Watch.
Yeah.
Depending on when you get the Watch Urbane, you'll probably be the first to have the new version of Wear as well. Yeah. That has those enhanced Wi-Fi capabilities.
It says available May 8th.
So when you get that, you should be first through the door.
2 weeks. We'll do a review on Before You Buy.
Yeah.
By then, I'll be ready to retire my Apple Watch. This is, by the way, not who I am. This is what I do for a living.
If you're gonna retire, you're gonna need the gold Apple Watch.
Yeah. This is my retirement watch. That's the one I'm the most excited about right now.
Until Google announces what they're going to come out with, if they have a Nexus
Watch.
You think
they'll do a watch?
I think they may do a watch, and we'll have to see what they do. But this is the one that at least looks the best. I don't know if I can afford it, but it at least looks the best. Yeah. It looks like a normal watch to me.
Yeah, $350. I'm glad to see the OLED. I like Android Wear. I feel like Android Wear is very close. I can't answer phone calls on this. But, even though I can do that on the Apple Watch, I don't know if I'm going to do that a lot. I've had a few phone calls. You certainly wouldn't do a long phone call. But what it is nice for is if somebody calls and you're in the middle of a show or you're doing something, you go, okay, can I call you back? And it's perfect for that.
Well, I think that the biggest, I always like to look at actual human behavior and how it changes through technology. And I think the biggest change with a smartwatch and especially the Apple Watch is that you stop carrying your iPhone. When you're at home or at work or in the car, it's not in your pocket. It's just around somewhere. Mm-hmm. And the Apple
Watch.
Talk
to me when you have an Apple Watch.
Well, I mean, but if somebody calls and it's in the other room, it's fine. You just say, hey, I'll call you back or whatever.
Right. You're not running around looking for it.
I have not yet.
I know I'm a starry-eyed dreamer about this Apple Watch.
I think you're
a
dreamer.
Thing.
But you're not the only one.
Thank you.
I still feel tethered to this. I don't want to leave it behind. I do. I'll leave it in the bedroom and go into my office. But then I go back again because there's so much stuff you cannot do on something the size of a watch. We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see. I'm going to wear probably 2 watches for a while. Maybe 3. I don't know.
Could be like, what's his name? Sven Olaf?
Sven. Sven. The Nexus 7 is gone, is dead. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a great tablet.
Mm-hmm.
I have mine. I had the 2012 and the 2013. Still use the 2013. A great price, a great tablet, I am sad to say. But I hope that is a sign that they will do the Nexus 7 Plus or something.
7.5 or something,
I just think that 7-inch tablet, they were the flavor of the month until all the phones got to be 5 and 6 inches.
Yeah.
Right.
And now it's like, who needs it?
Maybe you're right.
I've been using even my Shield tablet. I've been using it less and less since I got my Nexus 6.
Yeah.
Because it's just a bigger screen. And the stuff that I was running solely on that tablet, I'm now running back on my phone again. So,
yeah.
Yep. But I think it's safe to say that I think it's probably the most successful or one of the most successful Nexus devices that they've ever put out.
Well, I've been saying this and everybody always disagrees with me when I say this, but I'll say it again and see what happens. I think Google's lost its hardware mojo. There was a period of like a year or a year and a half where everything they came out with was kicked. It was just like,
oh, wait a minute, Mike. Surely you're not talking about the Google TV or that. What was that ball?
Nexus Q.
My son Kevin. My son Kevin still uses that.
Really?
Yeah.
That's serious.
Awesome. Yes. He got for free at Google I/O.
Yeah. Anyway, so
he's the only one.
He's the only one. But no, if you look at the first few Nexus devices, they were great. They had vision. But
remember, Google didn't build any of those.
No, I know, but they were responsible for bringing them into the world, and they were for Maker. You could take it apart. They were hackable. They were, they had tethering. They had all these like really cool things for, and they were cheap, right? So it's like, where are those types of devices these days from Google? They're all they used to be no compromises. Now they're back to compromises, namely a huge price for the current phone. So it's like, I don't know. It just seemed like they were so good at hardware for a little while, and now they're just kind of like, eh.
Oh, and they stopped all the Google edition phones too. Would run stock Google. They killed all those.
That's sad.
Yeah. It is sad.
It's one of the reasons I still think the OnePlus One, and I don't know when they're going to do OnePlus Two, but that deserves more attention. And now that you don't need an invite to buy it, I think that's the Nexus phone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because Oxygen, which is OnePlus One has severed ties with CyanogenMod now. Oxygen, which I immediately installed on my OnePlus One. You did that too, didn't you?
I did.
It's pure lollipop.
It's great.
I can't. Yeah.
It doesn't bother me at all. The people that it bothers are the people that really wanted all of that customization, the CyanogenMod
and all that kind of stuff.
But I really don't miss that. I just want that device to have Lollipop, and now it does. Yeah. I'm happy.
I think that's the Google Play Edition phone you want.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Frankly,
right. Yeah, and with a cheap, low price.
Windows. So this was part of the announcement. A lot of announcements from Build, and again, we'll be covering that on Friday with Mary Jo and Paul. But the big news, Windows 10 will be able to run Android and iOS apps. Well, sort of. You'll have to rewrite them. Microsoft is offering now a cross-platform free development tool called Code, which is kind of a mini Visual Studio, will be available on Linux and OS 10. And that is, to me, such a departure from the Microsoft of old.
Yes.
Microsoft hated Linux.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. Hated it. The fact that they're now offering development tools for Linux for free, mm-hmm. and inviting developers of Android and iOS apps to rework them so that they can run on Windows 10 is fascinating to me.
I think Microsoft is going to be selling its own version of Linux sometime in the next 2 or 3 years, mm-hmm. the way they're going.
Well, they did at one time, didn't they? They had Xenix. They had it wasn't Linux. It was a Unix.
It was a Unix.
In fact, that was, I think, Microsoft's first operating system was after DOS was Xenix.
I'd forgotten about that. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. Xenix has been around a long time.
But I think this is brilliant. This easy porting. I mean, this is
we don't know how easy it's going to be.
True, right? But the strategy is brilliant because essentially it's like every developer makes the same decision. They're basically, we got to be on iOS or Android or both, and then should we go to BlackBerry and Windows and so on? And it's like, it's not worth it, right? So, but if they just make it worth it, they make it easy. And this will be a chicken and egg type of thing.
So
if there's lots of apps available on Windows Phone.
This is the interesting Windows thing. You will, if you're an Android developer, continue to use Java and C++ on Windows 10 for your Windows 10 version. Objective-C, you will continue to use Objective-C. They've provided SDKs. What I find really interesting, of course, one of the things that keeps apps on Android, I imagine this is true in iOS as well, is the use of services, built-in OS services, that are not available cross-platform. Microsoft says, this is Terry Myerson, if they're using some Google API, we have created Microsoft replacements for those APIs.
You know where they first used this strategy? Remember when, I'm going to date myself here, but remember when WordPerfect was the big, and what they did was they came out they supported all the keystrokes in WordPerfect Word.
Right.
And that's what killed WordPerfect and sent Word to the top. This is a great strategy again. This is something they've done before.
I wonder if Microsoft's eating their own dog food. Are the very nice iOS apps that Microsoft has released based on this SDK? That would be intriguing to me. So Microsoft, for instance, offers Outlook on iOS. Do they actually? I don't know if they have a Windows Phone Outlook yet. They will.
Oh, yeah.
And I wonder if this is the same tool. Developers will be able to leverage their .NET and Win32 work, bring this to Windows Universal apps. It would be we've heard of this, that's what Java was supposed to do.
That's what I keep thinking about, Java.
Yeah. Write once, run everywhere.
Yep.
The problem with Java was the native UI. And they developed Swing, which gave you a little bit more native UI, but you could always tell, you still can, if an app is written in Java instead of the native OS. So when you use Eclipse on Windows, it's Java, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Even with the Swing widgets.
Yep.
So that will be the test. If you can't tell if it's a native app or a ported iOS or Android app. I think that will be very interesting. In any event, it's a what a brave new world.
It's a new.
If you had told me that someday Microsoft would make it possible to run Apple programs on a Microsoft platform, I would have laughed. Ha ha!
And I think a lot of people are saying that all this is coming about because Satya Nadella is good. And my contention,
I agree.
Well, my contention is, yeah, he's good. But I think the bigger point is that Steve Ballmer was bad. Yes. He was a terrible CEO.
I think you're right. And I've heard people say, oh, no, all this was in process with Ballmer was there and Satya's just inherited this. I don't think so.
Their market capitalization dropped by half over the period that he was a CEO. He was one of the worst CEOs in technology.
Wow.
And it was all because he was Bill Gates' friend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Nadella has shown that he is the right man for the time.
Yep.
Cloud-focused, not Windows, right. But Microsoft.
He's willing to embrace the new paradigm, which is what they've needed to do for a long time. I've never been a big Microsoft fan, but I like the direction they're going. I posted something on Google Plus about, you know, all the rumors swirling, like, you know, Windows is going to become open source, you know, because of some, like, a couple of comments that somebody made in a conference.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, if they're willing to at least talk about that, right? And that person didn't get fired, by the way, for saying that. So, I mean, if they're willing to talk about that, I mean, it's a change in the momentum. And they're saying, look, we need to embrace these things. We can't just live in our own little bubble anymore because we're not selling billions of copies of Windows around the world anymore.
So. And it's realism. I mean, there's certain major businesses that they rely on, namely Windows and Office and a lot of things around it, where, look, they're going to lose it anyway. So let's just try everything. Let's be on all platforms. Yeah. That's the right attitude generally. And I think it's going to take a while because they, you know, takes a while to change a reputation.
Good or bad, we should point out that both Gates and Ballmer were the right men for the time in the 90s and the 2000s. Sure.
Ballmer was never the right CEO, I don't think.
The profits were phenomenal. But I think you're right. He didn't turn the corner at an appropriate... Same way Bill almost missed the internet. Mm-hmm. Ballmer almost missed the cloud. But Azure's there. They had Ray Ozzie. Ray Ozzie was the guy who said, you guys got to pay attention. The cloud is the new OS, not Windows. And I think Nadella has recognized that. He did, in fact, come from Microsoft's cloud side. Mm-hmm. So he certainly recognized that. And he said very publicly... Look, we're going to be everywhere our customers are. And if that means iOS and Android, we will be there. But the best experience will always be on Windows. Yep. I think that's exactly the right message. I don't think users anymore – this will be interesting to watch. Despite the fact that our viewers, because they're enthusiasts, will fight that battle. It used to be Mac versus Windows. Now it's Android versus iOS. I don't think real users even care or know, just as they don't know a processor, how much RAM – why should they care about what OS they're running? If is my data there or my apps there, can I do what I want to do? That's fine. And that seems to be that's the promise of the cloud, isn't it? That it's just as the internet is OS independent, the cloud is OS independent.
Right, right. And apps as well. I mean, one of my favorite apps on iOS is a Microsoft app.
They do a great job. Yeah.
It's a great app. And what if Microsoft made 50 more great apps? Like, why not? That's Facebook's model, is to just get all, you know, get as many apps out there, feeding into, you know, in the case of Photosynth, that is not really involved in Microsoft Cloud, but what if they came out with a gazillion mobile cloud apps for every platform? That would be an amazing bit of, like, culture changing, like, change the reputation of Microsoft in the minds of the consumers, because you love the people who are giving you great apps and a great mobile experience, and they can do it.
Right. That's kind of like the Nintendo paradigm shift as well, right? Didn't they recently announce that they were going to do or start doing mobile apps? It's like, we're not going to do a console really anymore. We don't need to do a console. I think
they did say that, but they also said, but don't expect our old apps on the you know what everybody wants is Mario.
Right. The next Mario,
they're
Super
not
Mario.
Do that.
Yeah.
They're going to do new apps. And it's like, come on, you know.
But that's where their value is in the is in their Mario stuff and the Smash Bros and all that kind of stuff. I mean, that's what people buy.
That's what I want.
Yeah, exactly.
On Android.
Right.
Not that I would ever take an old show that I used to do.
No, of course not. Why would you do that?
Bring that back? No.
Nobody wants that.
Nobody wants that.
Oh, yeah, we do.
You know, I'll talk about an app that has failed. Just came in, breaking news. Secret is now going under.
And good riddance to it.
You know, I erased Secret from all my platforms months ago, but it was, for a while, a very addictive thing, especially because everybody in Silicon Valley was posting anonymous posts.
Only people in Silicon Valley.
It was pretty much only people in Silicon Valley. Anonymous posts. Secret does not, this is the David Bithau, who is the founder. After a lot of thought and consultation with our board, I've decided to shut down Secret. Secret does not represent the vision I had when starting the company. We built a product used by 15 million people, pushed the boundaries of traditional social media, but it's also the ultimate double-edged sword, which must be wielded with great respect and care. He's talking about anonymity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
And clearly, as we were talking at the very beginning, mm-hmm. you know, in Twitter, you are anonymous. Mm-hmm. In with the real names policy of Facebook and the formerly of Google+, although I think it's that lingers, that mm-hmm. legacy lingers, you cannot be as bad as you can be if you're anonymous. When you're anonymous, no holds barred.
Right. And that this was, to me, the fundamental flaw of Secret, which is that in the beginning, yes, it was all Silicon Valley people.
It was fun.
You know, leaking details about what's happening at, you know, at in various companies and so on. But for it to go mainstream means that 90% of the users at some point are going to be trolls, right? Because it's anonymous. It's like, you know, and it's a, you know, anonymity is the perfect platform for being a total a-hole.
Secret did not run out of money. In fact, they still have cash. They say they're returning that to the investors. However, of course, investors will have lost a significant amount of money on this.
And just as a side note, it has to be said that this was broken by a top-notch news organization that doesn't
BuzzFeed.
BuzzFeed.
They've turned into a news.
Well, they are both a link-baiting type of company, and they also are a yeah. really good journalistic organization.
Yeah, they've hired their way exactly. to become a good journalist.
Exactly. And I saw somebody say today on Twitter, that's what people really want. People do like link-bait, and they do like good journalism, and BuzzFeed is supplying both.
Bring it to us both. Jonah Peretti, who founded it, but who is running it now? They've hired some good people, but who's the EIC over there? Because
I just heard a story on BuzzFeed the other day. I can't remember if it was on NPR or one of those.
The editor.
It was really interesting to listen to. They're kind of up and down, and the scandals that have gone on over the years with pulling down articles.
You know who's executive vice president? Who? Zay Frank.
Really?
I did not know.
What the heck?
Wow.
What? I'm glad Zay Frank got a job. He was a very early video blogger, the guy who never blinked. So, yeah, they broke the story. Fascinating.
Yeah.
By the way, they didn't get much of a scoop since there was a Medium post almost immediately.
Yeah.
By David Bithau, the founder, with a very lonely and sad coyote.
Is, yeah.
At the head of it.
Aw. Secret's gone.
Aw. Well, wasn't the fox, the Secret's icon was a fox, so there's there's the sad fox.
A sad fox.
Wandering off into the sunset. Wow. It's really, when you see the app economy, it is just, we've talked about the business cycle being 10 years and less. It's 10 months and less now. You look at apps just come and go, boom.
Yeah.
Boom, boom, boom. All right, I think we could do some picks, but, you know, I think we should start with Aaron's arcade cabinet. This is really, really cool. You posted, you've put up a Google slideshow, or what do they call it? What's
I did that for you guys, so you guys could show some of the pictures in case people, you know, want to kind of learn how to do it. I'm going to actually be giving this presentation on the 6th of May in Benicia for one of our Makerspace workshops. So if you want to learn more, we're going to have a pinball and video game night, and that's... I'm going to talk about how I built this for that.
Well, when we first built the studio a few years ago, and I wish I could remember his name, one of our fans brought by a cabinet.
A full-size four-player. It's very similar to the one that I did. In fact, there's a picture of the one that I built.
Oh, you've done this?
Yeah. I built one very similar to the one you guys have in the basement. That was the one I built.
That's the original.
Before I moved out to California.
It's huge, very much like a real arcade machine.
It's huge.
And when you do this, you have to have roller balls. Joysticks. You have to have 18
spinners,
buttons.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You're going to do it right.
The thing is, it's just too big. And we live in California. We don't have a lot of storage space. Plus, I wanted to be able to tote something around to maker fairs and show people what they can do with Raspberry Pi and use it as a learning tool.
Well, that's the amazing thing. The one we have in the basement, I don't know about yours, had a Mac Mini in it.
Mine had a full-size PC.
It had a computer in it.
Yeah.
You don't need that anymore because now you can do it with a $35 Raspberry Pi.
That's right. Yeah.
It's remarkable.
This is all powered with a Raspberry Pi. You know, all the woodwork was just done out of a couple of 2-foot by 4-foot sections of plywood.
Did you cut it yourself?
Oh, yeah.
You got a little shop in the ground.
Wow. Yeah, yeah.
Looks great.
Yeah.
Looks
hardwood
perfect.
Plywood.
Yep.
And you have, by the way, the...
Now, those are... Some of these pictures are from an Instructable, which is linked in this presentation.
Yeah, this
right
is the two-player bar top arcade. So that was the inspiration.
This is the inspiration because this guy did such a good job. He even did... if you go look for a two-player bar top arcade cabinet on Instructables, you'll find it. He even did, if you go to the next page, you'll see he even did the IKEA version assembly instructions. I mean, this guy's an overachiever for sure. I want to hire this guy. He did not have to do that for an Instructable. But anyway, so the great thing about this, though, is it's all reused components, mostly. You know, so the Raspberry Pi, obviously, was new.
But that's
you
cheap.
Know, you got an SD card laying around, probably.
Right.
You got some power cables, an old power supply from
what
a PC.
What about all these controllers?
Yeah, they're pretty cheap these days. Right. I got that whole set there for about $70 on eBay. Everything I needed to build. These are all LED buttons, so they
does it really require quarters?
I've got quarter buttons. See?
Yeah,
they're virtual
quarters.
But you know, all this stuff is you know an old monitor, a 5x4.
That looks like a PC power supply.
It is. Yeah, there's a PC power supply.
That's funny.
That I, you know, all the LED lights that light up the marquee on top. That's all being run off that PC.
And you don't want a widescreen monitor.
You don't want widescreen. 5x4. That's right, because a lot of the old video games were vertical.
Right.
You know, so the nice thing about this is it's almost square, and you can play the early consoles, right, which were done on 4:3 TV screens, and you can play the old arcade games, and they both look great.
Are you running MAME? Are you running an emulator?
So there's a project, and I believe Brian used this for when he did the SNES Raspberry Pi thing that he did. It's called RetroPie. And it emulates just about anything. And if I had left all the emulators up here, you would have seen Apple II.
Oh,
you would have seen Amiga. You would have seen all of these cool emulators. But I took those out because this is mostly for
games. I got to get a Raspberry Pi. Yeah. It's going to run Windows 10, too.
Yeah, that's right. And that's
it's amazing. It's
supposed to run a developer edition of Windows 10, which is
really cool. That's amazing. Now, he did button decals. Did you do? Yeah,
I
did
the button decals. Yep.
Look at you.
The button decals are great because they really give it a professional look.
This is beautiful what you did here.
It's a lot of fun. There's RetroPie. You can see all the different emulators there. I know it's hard to see. You have to squint.
Holy cow.
Those are all the different emulators that RetroPie runs. And so it's the easy button for doing something like this. They even have an SD image, so you just download the image, load it onto
Megan asked me, because Megan Maroney, who hosts Tech News Tonight and iPad Today with me, her husband grew up playing Wizardry 1 on an Apple II.
Yeah.
And she said... Marco, the kids are, he's just got two 10-year-olds, are very into Minecraft. Marco wants to play something older with them.
Mm-hmm.
How can he play Wizardry 1? And I pointed to an Apple II emulator. Yeah. But this would be awesome to have this and play Wizardry 1 on this.
Yeah, yeah.
That'd
be
so much fun.
It does a lot of early PC games, too.
Yeah.
You know, Lands of Lore, I think, is on there.
Commander Keen would be fun on here.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
By the way, that was a successful project. Huck and Milo, his 10-year-olds, loved it. Mm-hmm. I thought, this isn't going to fly. But now they want to build Wizardry 1 in Minecraft. So,
yeah.
So total cost, $285 for
you? Now, that's with all the extras. You don't have to go to that extent. But again, it could be a lot more expensive if you're not reusing all of the stuff that you would normally throw out, put in a landfill, or send to someplace to be broken down. You can just reuse all that stuff.
Nobody sells the wood, because I don't have any woodworking skills. I can't just buy the wood.
You can't buy the wood, but what you could do is find a local maker or a local makerspace,
and
send them the designs. Maybe they'll cut it on a CNC machine for you, and all you have to do is
I'd
patch
love
it together.
To have this.
Yeah.
Wi-Fi dongle, so this has Wi-Fi?
It has built-in Wi-Fi. Yep.
Why? And so you Bluetooth. Can update it?
Yeah, exactly. So one of the brilliant things, or not brilliant, but one of the nice things about RetroPie is it automatically does a SIF share over your network with a link to all the ROM directories. So like when you need to import a game that you previously owned into this machine, right, you can just go to – you can be on your Windows thing, open it up, copy the file over, and then go run it.
Here's the parts list and we'll put a link to Aaron's slideshow in the show notes here.
Yeah, you can get all the details or just come see the presentation. There's a lot of pictures.
Where are you going to do this?
This is in Benicia. So
why MDF or particle board?
MDF or particle board. They're both awfully messy. Number one, they're not very strong.
Yeah.
The first one I built out of MDF because it looked nice. It's easy to route. Oh, man, what a mess. I got sawdust all over the place.
Hardwood plywood's like solid.
Very solid.
Feels good.
Very solid. Yeah. And it paints well because you can get like, you know, a birch veneer or just even the stuff you get out of Home Depot.
How big does that SD card? How much storage do you need?
I think this is only 8 gig.
It's amazing, really.
It's amazing. Gigs is, every Atari game is on here.
It's plenty.
That was made. And it takes up, I think, you know, less than 10 megs of space or something. It's crazy. It's crazy. Now, you can't run everything on here. Some of the newer arcade games and all that, you're not going to be able to run.
We're talking right? anything that's 20 years old
yeah, exactly.
or more.
Exactly. 1990, you know, previous, you can run.
I love it.
So it runs
and,
really well.
And do the kids like it?
Oh, are you kidding me?
You put little speakers in there. Look,
yeah,
it's
we've got
its own
speakers
and good speakers, so you can really make it sound good.
What my wife likes is that I reuse these speakers that I bought on Amazon, and if I point over to that one, you can maybe make out there's a little headphone adapter. So what my wife loves is the kids want to play their games, they can put on the headphones.
What is the game selection interface like? Is it text or is it images?
Yeah,
or?
Here it is.
There it is.
Oh, there we go.
It is. So you can go to whatever. I don't know what people like to play, but. You kind of scroll down. There's so many games on here.
You're still in the A's. You've been scrolling down for like half an hour.
And that's just one emulator.
Let me page down for you.
Okay. Yeah, wow. Page down. Look at that.
Jeez. Yeah, ours had a keyboard so you could simplify some of this stuff. But
and you can with this too.
Yeah.
I can go to
a Bluetooth keyboard you could use.
Let's go to D. I'll pull up Donkey Kong just for fun.
Oh, I love Donkey Kong. The first appearance of Mario. Although he wasn't called Mario then.
I got an image on that one.
Yeah, you can imagine that. Yeah. Oh, look how good that looks. Wow.
And Aaron, do you mind if I keep this?
Score? Does it make
those
this?
Are no, my initials are not MAR, but that was a nickname as a kid. So those are
Mar.
Those are my high scores.
See, there's Mario at the bottom though, although he was at the time not called Mario. I don't know what he was called. It was Little Plumber Man.
Little Plumber Man, or something like that. Yeah.
Oh my God, that does such memories, and it looks exactly the colors and everything.
Yeah, it's emulating, the exact machine. It's just emulating it in software.
And the Pi is fast enough to emulate
Pi is fast
fully.
Enough to run all of these old games like this. Not, like I said, not the new ones.
A lot
but
of these games
ones.
Were running on 6502s.
Oh,
they
yeah.
were not. This
oh,
was
yeah.
not.
Yeah, and this is running, I used the Pi 2, the Model 2 for this. Hmm. So that's another thing to keep in mind. The Model 2 is going to run more games because it's a lot faster than the original Raspberry Pi with single core technology.
That is a thing of beauty, I tell you.
Yeah.
I am so impressed.
This is the unveiling. This is the first time I've had it out of the garage. So I thought since I was coming over, I'd bring it. Also, we'll get to that in a minute. But it's a lot of fun. The kids are Burger Time. They're having Burger Time competitions. Mm-hmm. I don't know if anyone's been
What's
to
that?
The Burger Time? You don't
Burger
remember Burger Time?
Is that a game?
Yeah. Oh, my word. Here, we got a Paul Burger.
It sounds familiar. Are you throwing burgers?
Yeah. It's kind of similar to Donkey Kong in the level approach, but there's little like burgers and eggs and stuff walking around that you have to throw salt and pepper on.
Walking over them and making them
drop.
Oh,
yeah. It's kind of coming back to me. I think I was too old to play Burger Time. Oh, look at that. What was your game, Jason?
Oh, I mean, too many to count. I was always, what was it?
I loved, what was the one where you're climbing?
Crazy Climber.
Seriously?
Was that the one you were talking
about? Yes, that's exactly what I was thinking.
Okay, we're on the same page.
You're climbing up a building.
Yeah.
Now, didn't you have to do the joysticks
that's the problem.
Like this?
That's the problem with emulators on Crazy Climber, because if you do it on a PC, you've got one joystick and you need two. Here, it would work.
You got them.
Yeah.
You could do Joust.
Yeah.
All the games that had weird
controls.
Oh,
man, I want this
Centipede,
so bad.
You need a trackball.
I need to make this.
Crazy Climber.
Oh, man. I loved Crazy Climber.
Yeah.
Now, we should say these are totally illegal ROMs, right?
Absolutely.
What we've just told
I'm
you.
I'm using this for demonstration purposes.
This is for demonstration purposes only. If you were to do this, that's the game.
Yep, that's it.
That's so funny. You and I were both thinking of that game.
Yep.
It was a hard game.
Very hard. Yeah, it was in the pizzeria around near my house when I was a kid, and I played it all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Because you have to move around because there's window washers and things
and they
happen.
Drop pots on you.
They drop stuff, flowers. Plants. Oh, no.
I don't know what the controls are for this one.
You move each different joystick up and down. Yeah.
Okay. In some of the games, you have to manually specify, use the controls this way to be able to play them.
And once you set that once, it's set going forward for that particular game. Yeah.
Is there a archive.org has a lot of these ROMs, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can find a lot of these online. They're not hard to find.
Yeah.
But, there is some potential. And that's the nice thing about running the old ones is you're a little less likely to come under scrutiny if you're running the old stuff.
Really, you're not going to come under scrutiny.
No,
it's people who put them up on the web.
Right.
Sell them.
People don't sell them.
Right.
Don't sell them.
Don't sell them.
No, that's what I mean. That's
Spy Hunter's on here, absolutely.
It's like you're taking requests from the chat room here. Look at all these great games.
I'm so jealous.
You actually have a jump to letter sort games. You have a lot of, because there's so many games on here. Wow, there's Spy Hunter 1 and 2 and 3.
So I've never built anything remotely close to this. Do I have any?
Do it, Jason.
Do I have any ability of actually making something that looks even?
Yeah, you absolutely can. I mean, there's enough tutorials. That tutorial that was in that presentation I linked to is full of great details. Wow. The only thing I would say that's different is, you know, he used MDF. Don't use MDF. You're going to ruin your lungs.
Is it plastic? Is that?
What's that?
What's MDF?
MDF, it's a medium density fiberboard. It's kind of like a fiberboard. It's like smaller particles than particle board. Think of particle board, and then make the particles even smaller and glue them together. That's what MDF is, and it does route well, but it's not good to use. It's not going to be as strong as this.
Archive.org has 80,000 ROMs, a 50 gigabyte download. That's the problem. There's too many. You have to pick a few.
Yeah, there's too many.
Go with the ones you want.
Yep.
So I want you to do this, Jason.
I want to do it. Now I need to find the time.
And Aaron, I want you to come on the Screensavers and give us an even more in-depth
tour. Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to do it.
New Screensavers. By the way, we do launch the new Screensavers Saturday, May 2nd. That's this Saturday.
Awesome.
To 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time. It is not in any way related to any previous show, fact or fictional. Like, that's going to protect us. we are looking for people who have ideas that want to show something, ask questions, because we're going to answer calls. Email newscreensavers@twit.tv. That's our email address. newscreensavers@twit.tv. And join us on Saturday afternoon. It's going to be a lot of fun. I can't wait. Mike, you got a tip, a trick, an item?
First of all, I'd like to say thank you for making me follow Aaron's Arcade.
I know. This was a good one, huh? Well, I'm following you, so I'm the one.
My tool is bogus compared to what he brought in. But he built his tool. It is what it is. Okay, so this is a tool called Hunting Cabin. I assume that everybody uses Product Hunt, right?
Right.
It's a great resource to find new products and miscellaneous things. However, sometimes you're looking for obscure things. You don't want to go there every single day. And so Hunting Cabin is essentially like a Google Alert it's weird, for Product Hunt. So you go in there, you put the criteria in there, and then when your criteria are met, you'll get an email with a link to the Product Hunt product. Kind of a nice thing. You know, a lot of people do Google Alerts, which is, of course, I'm a Google Alert freak. I think I have like 300 or 400 of them.
Is it still around?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yep. And it's perfect as always. And what a lot of people don't know, and I'm not sure if I've mentioned this on this show before, but there's also a Scholar version. So if you like really obscure, geeky stuff, you can go to Google Scholar, that's scholar.google.com, and click on the Alerts button at the top. And that's a totally separate thing from Google Alerts. Google Alerts will not give you stuff from Google Scholar. So if you have very obscure interests, Google Scholar is one, and if you like products, Hunting Cabin is another that you can use to sort of automate it and really go after the obscure things, because, of course, you don't want to be checking. I mean, I check it every day, but most people probably don't want to go to Product Hunt every single day, so it's a great way to make sure nothing falls through the cracks.
By the way, Tag Heuer has announced a $1,400 Android Wear watch. So get ready. It's modeled after the Carrera. I think that's probably not the watch you're looking for.
It's only twice the price of one of Apple Watch's bands.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
Wow. All right.
I think I am still not sold that a watch is a wearable you want. But yeah. I think we're going to be in a golden age of watch choice anyway.
Yep. We are. Soon.
You mentioned, I wasn't planning on doing this as a pick, but I am going to do it now because you mentioned Product Hunt. There is and has been around for a lot longer, a Product Hunt for geeks called Hacker News. Now, many people know about Y Combinator, Paul Graham's startup school. And for a long time, they've had a really great news feed. It's at news.ycombinator.com. It's voted up and down. So the stuff at the top will be the highest votes. It's also a great source, not just for news, but for geeky stuff, projects, ideas, a lot of programming stuff. There was a period where people started gaming Hacker News, and thank goodness either they fixed it algorithmically or people just lost interest and moved on, because it for a while was starting to turn into dig, and now it's not. It's really great. It is I check it just like Product Hunt every single day, and if you want some really just kind of geeky news stories. I go through it and I get something almost every day out of it. A lot of it is for programmers and developers and geeks But if, for instance, you want to, you know, secrets number three on the stories, the launch of Visual Studio Code is number one. .NET for Linux and Mac, that's interesting, mm-hmm. number two. So lots of stuff in there, and I think a great way to get super geeky pretty darn quickly. A medieval English poet exposes the country's most corrupt industry, wool.
Fleeced. I like that. Fleeced.
Fleeced. Some of this stuff is just geeky. This is from Lapham's Quarterly. Louis Lapham's kind of eclectic mix of interesting stuff. Anyway,
yeah,
I think it was a lot of fun having you guys here. We didn't even miss Jeff and Gina.
Who needs them?
We did, actually.
I did. Aaron Newcomb, love having you. NetApp, thank your employer, netapp.com. We see Aaron frequently on All About Android and Floss Weekly, and whenever we can get him up here, I love having you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And what a great project. Please do come back and show us more.
I will, absolutely.
I like to open it up and look at
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I'll have to show you the guts.
Yeah, I want to see the
guts. That's what's fun.
You're not playing around with that thing. That's serious.
It's serious.
That's beautiful. Yeah. How long did it take?
A couple months. A couple months of work. And I've been working pretty heavily on getting all the difficulty is once you got it going and you get addicted to this, like now you want to get, like I brought my my PS3 or DS3 controllers, which play the Super Nintendo and the ones that need the shoulder buttons. So you got to get those set up just right, you know, and you can spend hours and hours tinkering with this, getting it set up just the way you want. The nice thing about it, since it's all on an 8 gig SD card, you can just take out the SD card, take it inside, back it up, and now you've got a backup image if you ever need to do something else with it.
I think you missed out on a monetization opportunity, though. There should have been
a quarters.
Real quarters.
Yeah, you could have made a killing. I think I might have gotten in trouble for that.
Apple Pay.
There we go. Apple Pay.
Just come up, tap to pay. Tap to play.
Nice.
We're cooking with gas.
Yeah.
Mr. Mike Elgin is our news director, guy in charge of keeping us all up to date on what's going on every Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 1700 UTC with Tech News Today.
Sure, it's a lot of fun.
He's also Natalie dressed and looks pretty good on a segue.
Yeah, yeah.
I showed the new screensavers open to a number of people, and almost universally they said, who is that Elgin guy?
Who wears a blazer on a Segway?
He is dressy. Yeah, he looks good.
It was
good.
Mostly me saying it. But
No. People who didn't know who anybody was said, They said, Brian Burnett looks suave. And they we should play it because you can see Mike looks so sharp.
Jason Howell looks tall.
Jason looks good. Everybody
as evidenced by my hunching while I rode the Segway everywhere.
You look good. Everybody looks good, but nobody looks good on a Segway. Everybody looks a little bit dorky in a Segway, except Mike Elgin, who looks like James Bond. I don't understand it.
It's the Google Glass.
Mike, thanks for being here.
Do you want me to play it?
No, it's all right. Everybody can go to inside.twit.tv to find out more. That show's coming soon on Saturday. If the good Lord's willing, the creeks don't rise and Comcast doesn't sue us to death. But tune in on Saturday anyway. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We do This Week in Google every Wednesday, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 2000 UTC. Of course, if you can't watch our shows live, every single one of our shows is available on demand. All you have to do is go to twit.tv. In this case, twit.tv/twig. We also put them on YouTube, youtube.com/thisweekingGoogle. And you can subscribe, which I would recommend. It's good for me, good for you. You get it each and every week. You don't miss an episode. We're everywhere you subscribe your podcast apps. I use Dogcatcher on Android, but you can use iTunes, whatever, Xbox Music, whatever you use. Make sure you get every episode. You don't want to miss one. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.